I came home unannounced and Prince was in my bed. That's I knew great. Ozzy from when they first started Cactus Plays with Sabbath. I loved Ozzy. Ozzy was a good guy.
What would your current self tell your younger self?
Never released the second Vanilla Fudge album.
How come?
Because it was horrible. But I went on to write Do You Think I'm Sexy and Young Turks, number one and top five records.
What's
anyway,
he like?
Rod is a nice guy. Did you read my book? Rod wrote the intro. In the book, he says, you know, all the great things about me and stuff. And then he said, I fired Carmine, knows why. Led Zeppelin opened up for Vanilla Fudge. I got John Bonham, his drums.
God, you have everybody.
It's You're my life. And it's come on to peace. You're listening to Life Minute.
Congratulations, the new album, Temple of the Blues 2. It sounds awesome.
It sounds great. Did you see the video?
The Little Red Rooster video? Yes, I did. It's excellent. Who produced that?
Well, me and the engineer guy that edited it and everything, we directed it and put it together.
It was really
and
good.
It was my idea to start in the old blues area, you know. And then he said, I got a good idea to put D in a car. We wanted to put the rooster on the emblem, you know, on the edge, but he couldn't do it. So he said, what do you think? I said, ah, that looks great. And then when we finished it all, you know, he had this whole thing with the rooster. He said, man, I want to change the rooster into a beautiful redhead. I said, but it's a male, you know.
Yeah.
You're going to change a male into a female, maybe a gender change. I was going to put gender change. But then I thought it might be too much bull with the politics. I probably should have done it. I probably could have got some press, you know. But so we changed it to a beauty makeover. And then when it went in, I said, when it comes out, then everything turns to color.
Yeah, it's so cool. Yeah.
And then when it was done, I said, I got to send it to D because that D is AI. He didn't drive in a car.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, he didn't drive in the car.
Oh, my God.
And we didn't play in the South. Everybody played in their own houses.
Amazing.
It's pretty amazing.
It really is. That was one thing I was going to ask you. I was going to say, you know, what do you think of music today and with all the technology? But there you go. In this case, it helped you out.
It works. It works. I mean, as long as you use it right, you know,
and
the,
it's still
the
your
fact
creativity.
That we recorded that whole album. Nobody was in the same room. And same with the last album. The last album, the only thing that was in the same room was Warren Haynes sang and played guitar in the same room, the same time. The rest of the album, everything. You know, that's what you got to do today. You can't get people in, you know, fly. I did that with I had an album called Guitar Zeus in the early 90s, mid-90s, where I had all these great guitar players on it, you know. And I used to fly with them with my 24 track. You know, and it was a bitch. Then it turned into D88s, the little things, you know.
Yep.
And now you don't even have to go to the room. You just stay at home. All the drums were recorded right there. See those drums? Those are Cactus bass drums from 1971.
Oh my God, really?
And those are, cool. And those are gold records and platinum records that nobody gets anymore.
Oh my God, I know.
This one over here, that one there
is
the double album from Young Turks. You know, we did the Young Turks on there, and I got a different combination of drums and cymbals, but they sound great. You know, I do it myself. I'm the engineer. And then I send it to my co-producer, Pat Regan, who's just amazing at mixing.
Uh-huh.
And then he mixes it all.
I love it.
I love doing it. I walk through my garage. It used to be once I recorded something, if I go to a studio, I get, you know, 2 hours getting the sounds, and then I could punch in and fix things. But if I take it home, I say, oh, man, I should have done that. I have to go to the studio and redo the whole thing over here because it never moves. Those drums stay there. They never move. The AC and humidity is on exactly the same. And I can record some today. Next week, come back in and go, yeah, I want to fix that fill and come in and fix it. And it's unbelievable.
How did you?
I always wanted to do that.
That's awesome. I'll see. So it's working for you.
The old way of doing it, the drummer is always doing the track, all the drums first.
Right.
And then, like, take 15, you still ain't got it. Forget it. It's gone by then. You know? If you don't catch in the first two or three takes, forget it. But then everybody else comes in, they do the guitar, they overdub guitar, they overdub bass, they overdub the vocal. Nobody but the drums had to do anything from the beginning to the end. So in 1982, I was determined to figure this out. And I did. And I've been recording like that since 1982.
You've influenced so many people. How did you know that you wanted to do something different? Like, you know, you created this kind of different sound.
I just did it. Vanilla Fudge, we were just doing what they were doing in New York. And we got the hit to keep hanging on. It was one take mono. 7 minutes to change my life. Everybody sang and played at the same time. We made a demo, put it on the radio. Everybody loved it. Put it on the radio, loved it. Atlantic heard it. They signed us. That was the single. And we did the
Amazing.
rest of the album. The producer, all he did was produce what we did live on stage. We didn't do it anything like different. We might did some overdubs of vocals different, but it was all the same show. And You Keep Me Hanging On was different. That was one take mono, and that one became the hit. That's why it's a mono. Because it's a demo.
And how did you get discovered?
Well, I played all my life, all through my life, from teenagers. I mean, when I got out of high school, I didn't go to college. And I had it. My father and mother said, you got to get a day gig in Brooklyn. You know, take the train to Manhattan, work, come home. Those days it was a buck and a quarter an hour. And I'd work $45 I'd make. I put in one hand $45 after tax. And I play on the weekend and make 20, $50. So I said to my father, so what should I do, Dad? This one or this one? He said, well, you should make 250. I said, good. So I quit the job. No, but I was playing before that. I was doing weddings, bar mitzvahs, jazz gigs, bowling alleys, anything in tech where you play gigs. $20, $30 a night. I have a book, two books from those days with all my gigs in it. And it's someday it'll be worth some money.
Oh,
You know,
yeah,
so,
gosh.
and then like I was playing clubs and one night these two guys walked in, and his name was Mark and Timmy, Mark Stein, Tim Bogert. I said, look, we need a drummer. You have everything we need. You sing. You got a great bass drum foot. You got good technique. You look good. You got everything we wanted. And we'd like you to invite a group called the Pigeons. And I was making 250, 300 a week. I was doing fine. And in those days, I met Jimi Hendrix. I was playing with clubs, and he was playing clubs too. So I said, yeah, I never played with a bass player. My band's always had a left-hand bass on an organ. So I said, oh, let me go check them out. And they offered this guy that owned a big club that I had played for before, and he was like a mafia guy. Goodfellas was all these guys. Henry Hill used to come to my house and sell me stuff out of the trunk of his car. That just fell off a truck, you know? You're in New Jersey, right?
Italian.
So I went out and played with them, and man, they were great. They had great vocals. Mark Stein was an amazing singer. They all played great. And it was $100 a week guaranteed, whether we worked or not. I said, you know what? That was like $1,000 a week now. I said, yeah, I'll take a chance. So we went out and we started playing. And then we got a gig in Newport, Rhode Island. We spent 4 weeks there and listening to the Beatles albums, especially, was it the Sgt. Pepper and all that area, And we said, oh, let's make it rain. It was like this was the fad going in New York. Leslie West was in a group called The Vagrants. Billy Joel was in a group called The Hassles. And we all did these slowed down versions of songs, except we had the most talent in one band. We had four voices, we had great musicianship, and we come up with these killer arrangements. And that's how we made it. So it's 4 weeks there, really did it. And we noticed that when we did You Keep Me Hanging On, instead of people trying to dance, and we did Ticket to Ride and She's Not There and stuff like that off the first album. They stopped dancing with Vanilla Fudge hanging on, and they would look at us and watch the show. And so we made the show really outrageous, and that's what happened. And then we put it on the radio, and Atlantic signed us. I always tell them, I said, look at that. You're together 2 years. I joined the band 9 months later, you made it. That's it, 9 months. It wasn't a long thing for me. It was harder to stay there than it was to make it. That's why Vanilla Fudge broke up. I started Cactus, me and Tim. Cactus did well. We joined with Jeff Beck. That did well.
What about Beck Bogart and
That was
after
after Cactus.
that was after Cactus?
That was supposed to be Cactus with Jeff Beck and Rod Stewart. Rod didn't want to work with Jeff anymore. And Jeff was coming over with Peter Grant, his manager, and he got in a car wreck and he was out for 18 months. So we were saying, oh, well, what do we do now? So we decided to get other guys that were in big bands. Jim McCarty was in Buddy Miles Express, and he was in Mitch Ryder and Detroit Wheels. They had a bunch of hit records. And then Rusty Day was in the Amboy Dukes with Ted Nugent. So we got those guys, and we did Cactus, and it did well. all around the world. We draw 3,000, 4,000 people, and we did a festival in England, the 600,000 people at the festival.
Yes.
And people think that we had connected with Melanie then, but we didn't. Melanie got to me through Cleopatra, who's my label, the owner. I know him since he started the label, and we're like good friends. So I consider them my label. I do everything with them now, you
Right.
know.
Yeah.
And they gave me this vocal of Melanie doing Purple Haze. I said, "Do you think you're going to put Cactus to Purple Haze?" I said, "Yeah." So we got the vocal. My engineer Pat did a click at the tempo we wanted, and he stretched the vocal out. And then I did the drums first. On the whole album, I did the drums first. I didn't play to anybody. I did in my head. I put it down on tape. I sang it, whatever. And so I did that, and I said, "Well, this is pretty cool." And I took it and I did an arrangement to it. And then where there's a guitar solo, we cut the vocal out, waited 16 bars, and put it back in. It was a real technical thing, you know. The whole album was real technical, you know, when it comes down to it. And just starting with the drums is usually not the way to do it. You usually have a click and a guitar and a vocal to play to. You don't just start with drums. So it's pretty crazy, but it came out great. That track came out great. So people, I'm doing interviews, said, "Well, did you meet Melanie at that festival? Was the Isle of Wight festival?" I said, "She was on it." "No, I never met her." You know, it's funny. On the interviews, I say, "Well, this track is a long way from that roller skate song." You know, you know. I mean,
Yeah.
when I heard her
It's
screaming, I
beautiful
said,
though. It
"Man,
sounds beautiful.
it
And
sounds
right
great."
before
Her
she
scream,
passed.
yeah, her scream sounds like Janis Joplin. She was like, you know, I said, I went, "This is Melanie," and he said, "Yeah." I said, "Wow." And he got the rights to her vocals, you know, to her estate. So, you know, there's that one, and you know, the way it all felt together, yeah, is
I can't
I.
believe all the people that are on it, you know, Ted Nugent, Billy Sheehan, Bumblefoot D, Pat Travers, the guys from King's X that are so cool,
I
Steve
love the
Morse.
guys from King's X, Steve Morse,
Yeah, they're really good.
Jolene Turner, Derek Sherinian, you know.
I mean, it
I
goes
can't even remember
on.
everybody. And the last one had more because I had
Right.
a double album last time, you know. And my guitars, I did that in the 90s. I did like Guitars One, Guitars Two, Guitars Korea, Guitars Japan. And I just listened to all the music on the plane the other day, come from LA. I just saw my grandson for the first time. So I went from LA to Florida with my wife, and it was like no internet. So I said, I'm going to listen down to the whole Guitars record. And I did. I couldn't believe the amount of work we did. The same thing, you know, except those days you had to go into the studio. When I did Ted Nugent, I flew with the 24 track to where it was, Michigan at the time, you know, with Yngwie Malmsteen, 24 track to Florida, you know, and then they came out with D88s, you know, they were little tape. I put it on there, and then I recorded them on there. That was great. So I remember the engineers looked at the pile of my 24 tracks and said, I was going to Japan. So would you rather take those? Or would you rather take this? I said, I think I'd rather take that. So I went to Japan. I did it. And then anytime I needed a guitar player here in America, I would just send them to D88. You know, I make a copy and they send it back.
I
Nothing
mean,
more.
obviously, you know all these guys, like, because you've worked with
Yes.
them all over the years. But how about the King's X guys? How did you find them?
Well, those
Like
guys
them?
were interesting because I was doing a tour with Blue Murder, my only tour with Blue Murder and King's X, and I can't remember who headlined that tour. Anyway, I'm always the kind of guy that, you know, the band under me, I like to meet them. Like when I toured with Ozzy, I hung out with Motley Crue and they were nothing, you know, and became friends with those guys. And so I said, "Oh, which one's King's X Buzz?" That one. So I walked in their bus and they were playing Cactus. I said, "Wait a minute, you're playing that because I'm here." I said, "No, we play that all the time. We love Cactus." He said, "We got so much inspiration and we work so much of your stuff into our stuff. It's unbelievable." And then they showed me a few things where I said, "Yeah, that does sound like us, you know." And they've been my friends ever since.
Oh, it's so cool.
They
I
sang
love
on the
that.
Guitars record, both of them. I had them on Cactus, Temple Blues One and Two, you know. And I had Doug sang on the gig we did last week, you know. I tried to
Oh, you
get
did?
Ty on, but he couldn't do it. He was busy doing something else.
Oh.
But he's awesome, man.
I
He's
love it.
awesome. Boy, and I found out he had, what a rough childhood he had, man. Wow.
Really?
I felt really bad. And he had a really, really bad childhood. But he took it and look where he is, you know? And he never told anyone. I heard it. We were sitting at a table. Me, him, Billy Sheehan, and Eric Gales. And we were just all talking about childhood and all that stuff. And yeah, Eric, well, I don't think Eric knew me. I knew him for years ago when he did the Hendrix tour, but he never really heard me play and stuff. And he said to my singer from the Rod Show, who I have a Rod Show called Rod the Show,
Yes,
which
sorry.
is endorsed by Rod.
Yes.
And he looks like Rod, sounds like Rod, and dresses like Rod, you know. And that's why Rod was, I showed him, he said, wow, I'm honored you're doing this. Because we're calling it the Rod the Show, celebrating the music and legacy of Rod Stewart, you know. So eventually, when he does retire, we'll be the only ones doing that stuff, you know,
That's so
if he
cool.
ta if he does if he does. But
What's he
anyway,
like?
he's a nice guy. Did you read my book?
No, but I know you
Well,
wrote it,
it's
but cool.
X-rated, but I don't know if you want to read it.
Oh
But
yeah.
it's pretty real. And Rod wrote the intro, and
Oh,
they
cool.
fired me. And he says in the book, he says, you know, all the great things about me and stuff. And then he said, I fired Carmine. Knows why. That really was it. I like when I said, why? You know? But I know why now. I mean, there was somebody in his ear doing coke and telling him, you know, he was jealous of my popularity with the band, you
Right.
know.
Oh my God.
So, and he was Rod's good English, you know, they're English. They drink all the time. I don't drink, you know, I didn't do coke, you know, so I wasn't in the clan, you know.
Yes,
But anyway,
smart.
but he knows now. But he knows now. And he's a good guy, you know.
Yeah, you're still friends. I gave you a table.
Yeah, we're friends through email, you know. I get it. He's so big and popular, you know. Probably gets 1 million emails a day. I mean, I get it a lot, you know. I don't answer a lot of them, but he does, you know. He gets back. A funny story with AI. My wife put it, words into the AI about our dogs. She said, "I want a 70s funk song twice, two different songs. Fantastic songs
Jeez.
in 5 minutes. Vocals, horns."
I
Keyboard,
know.
vocals, drum, everything. And I said, you know what? To my brother, I said, you know, we should do another album together, except we don't have to write songs because nobody cares anymore about writing songs, you know? That's true, unless you're a huge artist. So I said, why don't we take some of our songs that are famous and we'll put it through the AI and see what it comes up with. If it's good, we'll copy it. So we did that with Hot Legs. All right? It came out sounding just like Van Halen, all the guitar riffs, even my drum fills. And then I sent it to Rod, and he said, "Oh, that's great. So what is this?" I said, "What's something we just came up with?" He goes, "It sounds great. Good luck with it." And I sent text him back that it's AI. I never heard back from him.
My
But
God.
I'm still thinking about that. The heavy metal label. It's not really what heavy metal is to me and my brother. Heavy metal is like Metallica.
Right,
That's
right,
heavy metal. All
right,
the stuff before that's hard rock.
right.
Van
I
Halen's
agree.
hard rock. Led Zeppelin's hard rock.
Right.
Motley Crue's hard rock. King
Yeah.
Cobra's hard rock. Blue Murder's hard rock.
I
It's all
agree.
hard rock. Heavy metal was started with Metallica.
Right.
So I'm going to say
I
do
agree.
Hot Legs like Metallica
Let's
and
see
see what it
what
comes
comes
up with.
out. That's funny.
And then we'll copy it.
Can you do that? I don't even know how that works.
Yeah, I can do that. We're not using their version,
Right.
but what they do,
Make
I
your
mean,
own.
we'll
Right.
change it a little bit. We'll take the vibe of what it is.
That's
But I don't
hysterical.
know if I have time to tell you the truth. You know, it takes a long time. It took 6 months to make this record, or
Wow.
more.
Well, that makes
Same
sense.
with Vinny. Vinny's got a studio. He built my
Yeah,
studio.
I
We're
gotta
going
ask you
back and
about Vinny.
forth.
You know, I interviewed Vinny, of course, your brother, another amazing drummer. How did that work? Like,
Well, it worked that I had
why
made it.
drums?
I had made it, and he was only young when I made it. And we had seven drummers in my family.
Oh
I started by my cousin Joey had drums. He played. I'd go to his house, Italians, you know, all the holidays, and I played his drums. Then I bang on pots and pans. My parents got me drum. So eventually, I started drumming on this album I did with Pat Travis called "Ball the Balls" album. It's a song called Stand Up. It tells you the story of how it started with me playing drums and stuff. Anyway, so when I started making it, Vinny was like 8 years old, 9 years old. And he's seen me on TV, and you go into his little cubby hole in the basement. He had all the pictures of my bands on the wall, And then I go home one day, and my mother, and this is in the song, and I go in there, and Vinny's playing drums. And I said to my mother, "Who taught him that?" She said, "He's in there all the time, driving me crazy like you did."
Oh.
So I put that in the song. I thought that was good, Anyway, so then I saw the talent, so I sent him to my drum teacher. He was like 8, 9 years old. And my drum teacher made him really good. By the time he was 12, he was really good, And then he was under my wing like that. And then he got a gig up in, I made it. And then he got a gig up at the record plant with his band from Brooklyn. And the owner of the record plant was managing them. So they used to practice there all the time. And Jimmy Iovine, who wasn't really big yet, comes upstairs, "Hey, we need some hand claps on a song. Come on down." So the hand claps were whatever gets you through the night with John Lennon. So they meet John Lennon, and they're hanging out with John Lennon and all that. Then Rick Derringer calls my mother, calls my mother's house and said, "Hey, Rick Derringer, I'd like to talk to Vinny." "Oh no, you mean you want to talk to Carmine?" "No, you want to talk to Vinny." So eventually they got together. He took Vinny and the guitar player Vinny was working with, and they started the Rick Derringer, just called Derringer. And they went out on tour in stadiums with Aerosmith. And my brother was 16 years old. When he did the old John Lennon thing, 16 years old, he goes into, he's like this in school, teacher hits him on the head. He goes, "Vinny, wake up. What are you doing?" He goes, "I'm tired. Excuse me. Is anyone else in the class work with John Lennon last night?"
That's so funny. He
And
told
then
me
there's
one time
another,
he met your mom with the pan. He had a
what
pan.
goes on there? Yeah, that
I
was the
always
other
remember that.
story.
It's
That's a great
hysterical.
story.
He
I
was
do a
good.
thing called Carmine Appice Diaries, where I go in a place, we do like a venue, 300 seat venue, and have an intro, and the intro goes and it shows a diary floating and all the pictures going in there. And then it hits the ground and it comes up onto the screen as all the diary, all the stories wrote right in. John Lennon eats lasagna, Wise Prince in my bed, Rod Stewart, Jack
Prince. All
Beck,
right. Well, tell me some of those. I
and
know
then
the
I have the audience pick the story. All right. And what story you want to hear?
Why is Prince in your bed?
When I was getting divorced one time, one of the times, I had my house that I was selling. So my friend who managed Prince before he was big, he was called Punk Funk. She said, I brought him to her house. She said, "You can have that room. But once in a while, a new artist called Prince sleeps in the room when he's in town. He hates hotels." I already had a new girlfriend. I said, "Okay, I'll stay over there." So one time I came home unannounced, and Prince was in my bed with vanity. And I woke in and I said, "Oh, I'm sorry." I said, "I'm sorry, But he was very shy.
Yes, that's what I heard.
Very shy guy until he went on stage. So I was always coming home like he's playing some music. "Hey, Prince, that new track?" "Yeah." "Who played on it?" "I did." That's it. Until
Funny.
I got to know him a little more. And then one time he asked, I had a Pantera, One time he said, "I need a ride to Hollywood. Can you give me a ride to Hollywood?" I said, "Sure." Took him in the Pantera and it scared the hell out of him, going around the Hollywood Hills and stuff, But then when he played, he started getting big and he played his first gig at the Universal Amphitheater, 6,000 people. And he invited me. And I got him these things called Synsonic drums or electronic drums. I gave him some. I don't know if he used any. I think he might have used them. I thought I heard some on some of his records. And he invited me to the gig. So I went there with my girlfriend at the time and the woman that owned the house. And I'm watching him on the stage. He comes on in women's underwear and he's laying down on a mattress, humping the mattress. I said to him, "Is this the same guy that lives in the house? Are you kidding me?" And it blew me away. And then he did the movie. And
Yes.
he invited me to the premiere, and I sat in the premiere next to Sheila E. And I didn't know who she was. She didn't know who I was, and then
Wow.
we became friends,
Oh, yeah.
But it
Drummer.
was really a good relationship. And then he had a drummer named John Wright, I think his name was. And every time John would see me, he said, "Prince said hi." And
Huh?
one time he played, he opened up for the Stones at the Coliseum in L.A., and they booed him off the stage.
What? You're kidding.
Yeah, he wasn't
Wow.
known yet. And they blew him up staying. He came home, and me, him, and this girl Jamie, that was his manager, we sat around the table drinking some tea. And he was so bummed out about being booed up. So I said, "Look, dude, next first time Vanilla Fudge went to Portland, Oregon with the Mamas and the Papas, totally mismatch. And we got booed off the stage also. But my singer said, "Look, we flew 3,000 miles to get here. You can boo us if you want, but we're going to play for you whether you like it or not." By the time we finished, we had a standing ovation. I said, "So it don't matter. Just forget about that." And what? He turned it gigantic, right?
Sure did.
So
I don't even think
that's my
people realized
stories.
how good he was until he died, really. A lot of
Well,
people
even
didn't
so,
really
before
know.
that, he had a lot of hit, right? Had a movie. He had a movie. You're good enough to have a movie.
Oh, I loved
You're
him, but I
big.
just didn't think a lot of people
Yeah,
had
but
really
you're
realized.
big, you know? But then it's like Michael Jackson. Nobody realized him. He did Thriller and then exploded, you know? And then he dies. But he did all his great stuff before he died, which is great.
Yes,
Both of
they're
them.
great.
I mean, I had
So who
Jennifer
said?
Batten on my guitar album, too.
God, you have everybody on everybody. Who sang it right, by the way? Because Vinny
Saying
says
what?
apposy, you say a piece. Who's right?
Yeah, I mean,
Why?
it used to be Apice. It was Beck Bogan Apice. But everybody was screwed it up. You know, they would say, "Carmen, a piece." And I'd have to correct him. No, it's Apice and it's Carmine. So when I joined Rod, he said, "Look, we're going to play in front of 20,000 people a night. You do your drum solo." He said, he used my drum solo to go out and put on a new outfit, you know? So he said, "So I want to come up and say, that's on drums. So what should I say?" He says, "You're Apice, you're Peachy, you're Pice, you're this." He said, "What do most people call you?" I said, "Most people call me Carmen Apice. So Carmine Apice would be great." He says, "Okay, that's what we'll call you." So in front of 20,000 people a night, I was Carmine Apice all over the world. And then there was an ad I have over there from Ludwig Drum Company. All over the world, they put this in magazine. Everyone wants a piece of a piece. Right? And it's a good ad. It's told my history and big picture of me and Carmine Apice on the bottom. There's every rock magazine in the world, everywhere. So I was Carmine Apice. I was great. Then Vinny came out with Black Sabbath in the Apice. And it's still going on.
That's so funny.
It's funny,
You have
when
so
they
many
say
stories.
Apice to me, I say, "You're saying it wrong." You know, but they say Carmen too. I said, "Come on, how do you get MEN out of
I
MINE?
know, I know, I
How do
know.
you do
Don't
that?"
worry, I won't do that. You used to play with Ozzy too, right? So, and of course, Vinny played with Sabbath. So, what was that like, and how come
Well, I mean,
you tell me that
I knew
story?
Ozzy from when they first started. Cactus played with Sabbath, you know. So when they called me to join the band. I didn't call them, and I got fired from her because my name was too big. After she said, "You should have thought about that before you got me," you know. And I was doing master classes in every market, and she didn't like that. And I gave money from that to charities, so I got free press, and she didn't like it. But
Sharon,
anyway,
you mean Sharon?
Sharon, yeah. So Vinny told me a
Correct.
story about when he was playing with Ozzy. And he did a drum solo. He goes, "What should I? What do I say? Is it a piece or is it apathy?" You know. And he said, "Well, it's apathy." So when the first night they played, he went, "Vinny, a piece." He didn't know what to say on stage. It was funny. I loved Ozzy. Ozzy was a good guy. Yeah, his wife was the one that did all the dirty work. After they fired me, she said, "You got to start your own band." So I started King Cobra. I don't know if you ever heard of King
Of
Cobra.
course,
Yeah. So we were rehearsing at this place, and I also bought with the money I got from the deals. I bought a mobile home, a truck, and a van. I wanted everything to be white, so we had to change. We had to paint the mobile home. This guy who I worked for me was he worked on cars. He knew how to paint it. So Ozzy was in it rehearsing drummers, and I said, "Hey, Oz, what are you doing here?" He goes, "I'm auditioning drummers." That was funny, right? So he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm painting this. I was just up on a little scaffold, putting brown paper on the windows." First thing he says was, "I know you and my missus don't get along. I know you and me could still be friends." I said, "Yeah, Oz, I know what I'm doing." Then they said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm doing." He said, "You need any help?" I said, "Sure." So I put him up on the scaffold, and me and him are putting brown paper over the glass. I think that was funny. He's a
Oh.
nice guy. I always got, whenever I saw him, he'd stop and talk to me, but his wife would always pull him away. I was sitting at the Rainbow one time with him, and I'm talking to him, and he's had a bowl of spaghetti, and we're talking, and some fans came over for an autograph. I turn around, Ozzy's head was in the bowl of spaghetti.
What do you think it
Anyway,
is? Why do rock stars get into bands
it
that?
must be due to the drugs they did when they were younger, I would think, the
But why
cocaine.
do they get into it? Like, why do such talented people get into bad stuff?
Because that was the deal back then. Nobody knew it was really bad. So you smoke pot, and you get arrested for it. Cat just got arrested for it one time, even though it wasn't pot, it was a catnip.
Jeez.
Right? We gave it to one of our roadies as a goof, and he asked the stewardess on the plane to smoke it. Next thing we know, we land, and everyone, "You can cat this?" "Yeah, we thought, hey, great, we can cat this." "Yeah, get over there." We got arrested. On our third album, we had a song called Blues called Mean Night in Cleveland. And that was a mean night in jail. And a lawyer got us out. Hey, we made the news run. Eyewitness news all over the country. I had to call my mother, tell her we're okay. It's just
Oh.
catnip. But yeah, it was just a thing. Everybody smoked pot, Even before, all that time, Jimi Hendrix, when I met him, we were in clubs smoking pot, But now it's all legal. You walk
Yeah,
around New York
definitely.
City, we got rid of our apartment
Yeah.
last week.
Yeah.
You open the window to get some fresh air.
Oh, I
A pot
know.
smell comes
I
in.
know
I
it
mean, you
is.
had legal booze. You didn't walk around drinking booze, everybody,
Yeah.
did they? That's
Right.
stupid, man. I couldn't believe it. I said, man, I'll shut the window.
I know. It's
I don't smoke
terrible.
anymore. It's just like I
Yeah.
had my fill of it. That's why I'm still doing it. I love playing. I love recording. I don't like doing big tours anymore unless I'm on a private plane with your own doctor, like Rob does. Because
Yeah.
we travel in splinter vans. We do like we're doing the tour I just told you. It's mostly a splinter van. It's like, you got a 4 hour drive. You drive 2 hours and then you go to a hotel and wake up and drive 2 more hours.
Yeah.
You don't drive all the straight through. It's like it's too hard. Even in a bus, you don't sleep in a bus.
Yeah, I
I
bet.
sleep in a bed.
Yeah,
But
good.
I never took a bus until Ozzy.
Really?
That's the truth. Yeah. My whole career up until 1983 from 67, never took a bus. Always flying. And flying was a lot easier back then. I mean, we did a tour with Hendrix and Fudge and two other bands. We'd get all our gear in a truck and they'd pull it right up to the belly of the plane that we're on. No security.
Yeah.
Get on the plane, there's like 30 of us, and we go to the next, another truck pulls up, gets all the gear off right to the
Yeah.
gig.
Yeah.
A limo to the gigs,
Yeah.
all that stuff's in my book, except I left a lot of the crazy sex in the book. Like there was a, I won't tell you that about them.
Have to read it.
Well, Frank Zappa made a song out of one of them. It
He
was called
did?
Mud Shark. It was called Mud Shark. Pull that up and listen to Mud
Okay.
Shark.
Oh my God, it's awesome.
That's crazy. Anyway,
How'd you come up with the name Cactus?
funny enough, we were in Arizona. And on top of this drive-in theater, as giant words just said Cactus. I was with Tim. We were with Vanilla Fudge. I said, "Tim, that's the name of the group, Cactus." He said, "Yeah, I like that. And it looked huge. It looked strong. And you think of a cactus, it's a strong plant.
Yeah. It
So,
never dies.
no, it never dies. It just keeps going. And now it keeps going. It's just
Yeah.
amazing. It's keeping it going."
It's so
I never thought it
awesome.
was going to keep going. When McCarty said, "You take it, I don't want to do it no more. You take it." We did European gigs. We went to South America. We did a lot of stuff. We had big crowds as well. And then he couldn't travel. He could not travel. Worse than me. I mean, he would sleep like this during the day, driving to the next gig. And finally he said, "I can't do this."
Yeah.
So he said, "You take it. If you want to do it, and keep building it." I
Boy,
said,
did
"Okay."
you.
Yeah, so I did a bunch of deals with the first gig we ever did, a couple of other gigs we did, and so he's making money on it, not a lot of money, he was making money. And then the Cleopatra Records, the owner, came up with the idea of doing this. It wasn't called Temple of Blues. He wanted me to do an album that would but the influences that Cactus had on musicians.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it's called Cactus Influences. I said, "What about friends?" So influences and friends. I said, yeah, that's cool. He liked that. And then I was looking at the Billboard charts, the blues charts, and he had, who's on the blues chart? Foghat, Robin Trower, Slash, all doing blues stuff. I said, we should market this as a blues record. He said, yeah, let's call it Temple of Blues. I said, great. And we got everybody on the first album, everybody, like Sgt. Pepper, everyone that played on the album is on the cover, and it looks like a temple. And then we released it, and it did well. And then he said, let's do the second one. I said, okay. But he said, don't do 14 tracks. Do 10 tracks for the LP and one track extra for the CD, because it doesn't pay to do the two LPs, financially. I said, okay. So I figured 10 tracks for the album, one track for the CD extra one. So that's what I worked on. So I had three Cactus tracks. I had the track for Melanie sorted out. Then I need seven more tracks. I said, so what should I do? I want to call it Temple of Blues. I wanted to get a nomination for blues, combination blues LP or album, from the Grammys. And what they do, they put us in with Temple, what's her name? Who's the big, the number one woman act, a female act?
Taylor Swift.
That's the one. Okay, exactly. So they put our album in with her album. I said, well, we're not a rock album. So this time I said, I want to do blues. So I knew an album that we got Cactus Evil off of, which has been in a couple of things on Netflix and Apple Music and stuff like that, Apple TV, and I had a couple of tracks in the movies. Howlin' Wolf's Electric album. I got Evil off that. Jeff Beck gave me that album. Jimmy Page gave him that album. If you could hear so that album, you'll hear Led Zeppelin, you'll hear some Jeff Beck, and you'll hear Cactus. So I took the other seven songs that we didn't do, and we did that on this album. Little Red Rooster, that was a Howlin' Wolf album. Backdoor Man with me, Billy Sheehan, and Eric Gales, phenomenal. When we just did the tour, we had that in the middle of the show. And my singer from Rod sang, because D was supposed to be there, as you know, he retired. So I had to get somebody with that growly voice. So my singer did it. And when we were rehearsing, we did Backdoor Man, then we did Little Red Rooster. And I felt it, he felt it. He said, you can't follow that. You can't follow Backdoor Man. It's so amazing. You can't follow it live, especially. I said, you're right. So I moved it to the end of the show. The only thing that can follow that was the Cactus Boogie, energy-wise, and that's what we did. And that
Cool.
unbelievable reaction from the audience,
Awesome.
So we're doing all these great boogie and bluesy kind of songs with tremendous, great drum tracks. So the guy did, Morris Levy did fantastic, fantastic drumming. So I took what he did on Evil, I did it my way. I did the same thing on all this stuff. You
Awesome.
know, because some of his good, they're not just boom, bah, boom, bah.
No.
They had like, boom, boom, yeah, boom, 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 yeah, boom, all this cool grooves, man, really cool. So I did it my way, and we did seven of their songs, three Cactus songs for the album, and one Cactus song for the CD.
Awesome.
Actually, two Cactus songs for the album and the Melanie track, because the Melanie track fit in with having other people play. Except she had Purple Haze, which is a blues anyway.
When you go on tour, who's gonna pop up with you for when your next few shows
Well, we're going to
coming?
do Cactus All Stars. I think Billy Sheehan, Eric Gales, and Bumblefoot or Pat Travers, and then the regular Cactus band. I think that we're going to try and book some stuff in July,
Good.
maybe the end of July, so give us 3 months to promote it.
All right, cool. I got to check it out. What was
Yeah.
Jeff Beck like? I didn't ask you that. And why did that band
He
break
was a
up?
lot. He was a lot like Prince, introverted, but when you got to know him, he's good. But there's a few things I've done with him that. And didn't work out. Things I did do with him, like People Get Ready, started in my house as I was getting divorced from a second one. And he came over to my house. He had his girlfriend he broke up with, come to my house in LA, hung out. We sat a ball together. And then I said, let's do some music. We went to Duane Hitching's house. He wrote, co-wrote Do You Think I'm Sexy and Young Turks with me at a little studio. And we started putting all this stuff together. They're licking, da do do do. That was Jeff. That was Dwayne's lick, not Jeff Beck's lick. And then we started putting it all together. And then Jeff said, "That sounds like People Get Ready." I said, "Yeah, it does." So I sang that in Vanilla Fudge. I started singing along with it. I said, "Yeah, this People Get Ready." So he said, "Do you think we can get Rod?" Because he wasn't on good steps, good steps with Rod, And so we called Rod and we met him in an Italian restaurant. We met him. We played him the cassette, right, in the car. How old is that? Right? And then he loved it a week later in the studio, in a record player with my friend Ricky DeLina that grew up with my brother Vinny, same block, And I had Jeff there, and Rod there, and earphones on. We played the track. I pointed to Jeff where to sing. And we put it out, and we have no credit at all. But he was a nice guy. But I don't know if that came from the manager or what. A lot of stuff comes from the management. We always got along together. We always had fun. Tim punched him in the face when he was really sick. That was the last gig we ever did. And it's out on a box set now. Called the BBA box set. There's two live shows, the last show in the London Rainbow. And I sang most of the songs. So you should check that out. It's pretty good too.
I will. What would your current self tell your younger self?
Never released a second Vanilla Fudge album.
How
That's what I would
come?
do. Because it was horrible. It was horrible.
What?
It wasn't music. It was kind of a statement, but it was too early in the career, It's called The Beat Goes On, taking music from the beginning, Mozart and all that, going all the way up to the Beatles, at the time, the Beatles. And then talk about, how music through wars and everything, Black Power and, Sieg Heil, Black Power, nothing to do with music. The only song on it was Fleur de Lis and a piece of a classical piece. That was it. Couldn't even play that on the radio. And then Strength of the First Album was number four on the charts. It came out. And all these radio station FM players, they played it, the whole record, and everybody started calling in. They were on LSD and stoned out and calling, telling them to take it off. It was depressing them. Ruined our career. Everyone around us, Jimi Hendrix, the Queen, the Doors, Jefferson Airplane, everybody around us that was on the charts in the top 10 at the same time went on to be giants, right? Vanilla Fudge went the other way. All we had to do was the same thing we did on the first album, but we didn't. But we knew we didn't know any better. This was Ahmet Erdogan. He owned the label, and Shadow Morton, the producer. It was their idea, their idea to ruin a band. So that's what I would do. Luckily, I went on to be successful. But who knows where Vanilla Fudge would ended up being? Could ended up being, Madison Square Garden two nights, We did play the Garden once in the Fell Forum. It's 5,000 people. It's a big difference. So that's what I would definitely tell myself. Don't do this.
If you have an
I was
instinct.
questionable anyway when I was listening to him. I said, "What are we doing?" And Mark and Vinny were like, they were the heads of the band. Wow, this is cool, man. When me and the manager and Tim Bogert heard it, we said, "Oh my God, what a bunch of crap." And it's proved that way. But I went on to write Do You Think I'm Sexy and Young Turks, number one and top five records. So,
Yeah, tell us
it
about
wasn't
that.
that bad. That was way after.
Way
That was
after.
after BBA. I
Okay.
had a band with Mike Bloomfield called KGB that really didn't do anything. And then I was asked to join Rock, and I did. Like I said, Rock was cool. I want a song like Missing You by the Stones. And I went home on the keyboard, and then I went to Dwayne's house at the studio. Made it sound good. He had a bridge. I gave it to him. He loved it. Simple as that. All right. Took about 2 or 3 days. And then we were down in Australia. We had a 30, 40 person crew. And Rod comes up and he said, "Look, song's number one in America, number one here, number one there. You're going to make a lot of money. Let's buy the crew dinner." All I had was a credit card. And he's the one with a lot of money. But I did. I bought it. It's all good. And then he wanted another song, like a more punky kind of song. And we did Young Turks.
Two amazing songs.
Yeah, two amazing songs. And then
And
no
those
one
aren't
else.
that drummy. They're not like heavy drums on those two songs.
No, there was heavy drums before Tom Dowd. When it was 124 track, it sounded really heavy and really guitar heavy. But then he put all these orchestras and vocals and all this stuff. Then went 24 tracks on 48 tracks and everything shrinks. And we were all bummed out a bit about that. But then it came out and went to number one in 15 countries. We said, okay, We're good. And the other one was the drum machine that I was using. I was experimenting with it. And we were probably the first band to ever put a real drum machine to sound like drums on a record. And I did hi-hat and cymbals. So they sounded like shit. And it went to number four all around the world. So it was good. It was two experiments, really.
Yeah, it's
And
cool.
then, when I got fired from Ozzy, I was a little pissed off because I really wanted to work with Ozzy and help write songs and get the killer drum sounds because he always had drum sounds, these records, until my friend did it. And the guy that helped me get the drum sound that I worked with to show him how to get the Andy Johns drum sound that I did with Rod in Pasha Studios. The first record they released was Quiet Riot, that big, huge record. That was my drum sound.
Yes.
That I worked out with him. Every time Frankie Benelli, the original drummer that was on it, came over and saw me, gave me a kiss, Italian, gave me a kiss on the cheek, said, "Thank you so much for that drum sound,
Oh my God. You've
And
influenced so many people. Who
yeah,
else?
but it wasn't like an influence, it was like something needed to be done, Pasha, I did the record with Ted there, and it was horrible drum sound. So the producer said, "Well, what would you do different?" I said, "I would do this, I would do this, I did this." And I did all that with the engineer, the younger engineer, and he helped, I showed him how to do it, and he engineered, he worked the board. I didn't know how to do that. And then we came up with this great drum sound. And then all the stuff I did there had that drum sound, I did a
Yeah.
record with Rich Derringer there, I did a Vanilla Fudge Mystery record there, I did King Cobra there, and I carried that drum sound everywhere, even in my studio here. I got a mic down the hallway. Yeah, two mics here. There's one mic here, one here. My room mics, all close miking there, and the way the overheads did. I learned that from Andy John. Rest in peace. He was the best.
Who are your favorite drummers?
Buddy Rich, Billy Cobham, Tony Williams, Max Roach, Joe Morello. And out of all the drummers I liked from my era, Keith Moon's gone. Mitch Mitchell gone, Dino Danelli's gone, and who else? I'm missing somebody.
Bonham?
No, John Bonham came after me.
Well, he you
John
influenced
Bonham, I
him
got
too.
John Bonham his drums. This is a long story. Is it
Tell me
happened to
that
open up
too.
for
Tell
us?
me that too.
Yeah, well, Led Zeppelin opened up for Vanilla Fudge. We heard the album before. I heard him do that triplet thing on Good Times, Bad Times. I loved it. They opened up for, he had a little drum set. I had a big drum set. I got a picture of me and him. He said, "You think you can get me a drum set like that?" I said, "Yeah, I was big heavy duty guy in Ludwig drums." I called him up and I said, "Look, this is a band thing. They're called Led Zeppelin. This drummer's really great. I think he, I think he would be really great for Ludwig. He wants a kid just like mine. What do you think?" Probably the understatement of 7 decades, right? Okay. So they got it for him. They did it. They worked with me and I got him his drum set. They opened up for us, and then the later it was they opened up for us, we opened up for them because 6 months later they had a gold record already, and
Yeah.
we were just good friends, I was good friends. And I said, "I love that triple thing you do." I said, "Yeah." He goes, "I got it from you." I said, "I don't do that." And he pointed out on one of my records where he would do like dip boom boom dip boom boom dip boom constant. I would go bump, but it bump. Ba-da-bump, ba-da-bump. So he took that ba-da-bump and developed on it. And he showed me on my record. I said, "Well, I did do that." He goes, "And there's some other things that he's done, all my fills, like you heard the fills in that video, ba-da-bump, 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 that came from me." He did it on a lot of records, a lot of records. So we were good friends, We were good friends. We go on the next tours, and he got off the stage with John Paul Jones, and then they're supposed to go back on. And he said, "Hey, why don't you and Tim go instead?" So we did. It was so different back then. It wasn't a business. It wasn't a business yet, It was just a lot of fun. Everybody made records. Everybody went out on a tour and had fun. We used to get a salary every month, every week. Come back, we got 2 grand. Wow, we got $2,000. I mean, in 1968, that's worth like, what, 20 grand? Yeah, but we had fun.
What does music do for people?
What is music? I think it makes them feel good. If they have problems, they're depressed, sometimes a song will hit them. That's me. Or sometimes they just go out to have a good time. And Cactus was a good time band. Vanilla Fudge is more of a serious kind of dynamic band with lots of classical stuff in it and voices and all that. Cactus was just a kick ass. Go have a good time. Those days, go do some drugs and come see Cactus.
Not now. We'll have some
Not now.
iced tea and see cactus.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
It was
Lovely to
a
talk to
pleasure.
you.
Well, good luck with the tour and everything. You're a legend.
My life. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks,
Bye.
Carmine. Bye.
Bye, baby.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv.